Milwaukee, good afternoon. How are you doing? You are now tuned in to the Grapevine on the Truth 101.7 FM, live in the American Family Insurance Studios, located in the heart of downtown Milwaukee in the 3rd Street Market Hall. I am your fill-in for today, Ray Nitty, filling in for Manon on the Grapevine. He'll be back, man. Don't go anywhere. He'll be right back. I'm just filling in for a little bit for y'all. Hope everything has been going well. We are talking about mental health and just mindfulness in general and taking that time to take care of ourselves and so forth. I wanted to get into a story that recently broke today. Just switching the gears a little bit as we wait for our next interview to start with Brother Jeff Lewis. But just something for us to pay attention to. I don't know if you all have been up on the situation with the CEO of the Wisconsin Center District, Marty Brooks. I'm just read a couple things for you all. So after months of meeting in private about the future of Wisconsin Center District CEO Marty Brooks, the organization's board voted in public Monday morning to fire him. The reason, according to one board member, was misuse of district credit cards for more than $50,000 in expenses, including political contributions. In a unanimous vote of those participating, Brooks was terminated for cause. One board member abstained. Brooks has been embattled for months, first with the accusation that he pinched the butt of board member Jose Perez at a fundraiser. Jose is also the Common Council president as well. So he pinched his butt at a fundraiser last year, and then with board concerns over $145,000 study that Brooks entered in unilaterally, which recommended replacing the Miller High Life Theater with a convention center and hotels. But according to board member Bob Bauman, neither of these things led directly to the firing. So they're saying he spent upwards of $50,000 to $60,000 on numerous things like expensive shoes. And some even said they said he even gave political contributions as well, which is funny to me because one of the political contributions they're saying he gave was allegedly to Alderman Jose Perez. So I would like to hear y'all thoughts. Call in 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. We are just talking about the state of our city. And ironically enough, we had last week just talking about, is our leaders destroying our city? And is this another example of companies or people that has, and just for context, Marty's salary is about $400,000 a year, if I'm not mistaken. That's a pretty, pretty bag. So $400,000 a year, but still allegedly accused of misappropriating $50,000 to $60,000. Are we turning too many blind eyes to mismanagement of funds in the city of Milwaukee? And who's paying the ultimate price for it? If you know about the Wisconsin Center District, they are receiving it's a specific tax. I'll make sure I get the name for you, but it's a tax essentially that I want to say hotels and other organizations pay into, but that's how they get their funds. And they also fund things like the Visit Milwaukee and things like that gets supported out of that. So just would like to hear y'all thoughts. So if you have something to say about that, please give us a call. But I think we have our interview on the line right now. So we will go to line one to speak to Brother Jeff Lewis.
What's going on?
Jeff, how you doing, man? I'm filling in for your boy, Manon. Doing?
Man, pleasure to meet you. It's an honor to be on the call today.
Man, I just want to give the people a little background about you, and if I miss something, please chime in.
Okay.
Jeff Lewis II is vice president and wealth advisor in the Los Angeles office of Bernstein Private Wealth Management. I know Manon also said you were at Charles Schwab's as well.
Prior. About 4 or 5 years ago now.
Okay, 4 or 5 years ago now. So you are president and wealth advisor at Bernstein Private Wealth Management, where he specializes in guiding business owners, athletes, entertainers, and nonprofits through complex financial landscapes. He focuses on building enduring relationships grounded in trust and a shared vision for the future. Before starting at the firm in 2024, he served as regional vice president at Fisher Investments, senior financial consultant at TD Ameritrade, and financial advisor at McAdam Financial. Jeff holds a bachelor's in financial planning and services and financial planning and services from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he also played running back and competed in 3 Big Ten championships and Rose Bowls. Jeff is a certified financial planner professional. He is actively involved in the LA Advisory Board for the Hidden Genius Project, the Wisconsin Alumni Association at the W Club. Jeffrey resides in Los Angeles with his wife and their 2 young boys. Did I do a decent job, Brother Jeff? Did I miss anything or misspoke on anything?
Perfect, man. You hit it right on the head.
Man, how you doing, man? I know the weather is beautiful out there.
It's good, man. We're spoiled out here, but I will say, like, it's always nice, but it's a different vibe when you compare being nice out here to being nice in the Midwest. Because in the Midwest, you get, like, what, 12 weekends where you know it's going to be nice. So,
man, that's if it's 12.
Happy out and about. It's just a regular day in L.A. It's always sunny. So I would say if you want to, like, the energy and the environment of a city, I would definitely take the Midwest in the summertime over, like, any day in L.A. because people just take it for granted, you know?
Got it. For sure, man. I know I don't take it for granted being born and raised in the Virgin Islands and moving to Wisconsin weather. So I always enjoy a trip to L.A., man. I always enjoy a trip to L.A. Man, so this is a very important call. So I want to let's dive into it, man.
Let's go right into it.
I want to talk to your relationship with money, right? What does a healthy relationship with money look like? How do our families and life experiences shape our money habits? What's one common money mistake you see people make? And how can someone improve their financial mindset? There's a lot I want to ask. I don't think I'm going to get to all my questions, but I would love to. Because, you know, we got IPOs happening this week, all types of stuff happening this week. So I'd love to get into this. I look forward to the knowledge.
Yeah, man. So the first portion of your question, what does a healthy relationship with money look like? I would say when you are in control of your finances, not letting your finances be in control of you. Mm-hmm. So what that actually comes down to is just your day-to-day and how you spend money and how you have a foundation around what money means to you. And so I often tell people you should always pay yourself first opposed to spending that money out elsewhere. And so paying yourself is just putting away like 10% of your paycheck, right, into a savings account or preferably an investment account that's going to grow over time in the stock market. You mentioned SpaceX, Anthropic, all these companies are going public. So whenever companies go public, that means it's all a huge, huge, amount of people who are getting very, very wealthy over that time period. I often tell, I relate it to sports. So you know how, you know, NBA draft night or NFL draft day where you see these people walking on stage getting paid millions of dollars.
Yep.
In the corporate America, that is their version of that, right? So when these companies IPO, the people who have been there from early on days or the first couple of employees or first 100, I mean, these people are instant millionaires, like, overnight. And so, a healthy relationship with money is ensuring that, like, even if you're not a SpaceX employee, that you are the individual who is, you know, being really, really smart around your finances. And that starts with day one of just how you treat your money and your relationship with money. So opposed to going out and buying and spending all your money, like pay yourself first and then go out and do the things that you need to do.
Yep. So generational wealth, right? I feel like in our community, freedom is the ultimate goal, right? Mm-hmm. And freedom may look different for numerous people, but how do we create generational wealth in today's climate? And what's your advice for managing debt? And what's the first step to creating a budget?
Yeah, so generational wealth is something that has to be spoken to at the dinner table, right? So if, you know, oftentimes if you compare the wealth gap in America from black and brown folks to white folks, mm-hmm. you know, this is generational curses that we have been fighting against, where we weren't even able to purchase houses, right? Mm-hmm. If you mm-hmm. go back to the 50s and 60s, and now we're really feeling the effects of that. So oftentimes when people pass away and their, you know, their grandparents or their parents left them houses or trusts or all this money, a lot of that wasn't even feasible for black and brown folks. But the way to address that moving forward is to be on your P's and Q's. So investing in things that are actually going to grow, right? Mm-hmm. Like real estate. You know, I'm not the one to shade folks who are spending money on whether it be shoes or jewelry or diamonds, because everybody has their interests, but you want to invest in things that are actually going to appreciate over time. Cars actually depreciate over time unless you're investing in like collectibles, like classic cars. Most cars are going to lose their value as soon as you drive them off the lot. So, yep. you know, as a wealth advisor, people are asking me, like, how can I create generational wealth? First and foremost is open up an investment account and saving 5 to 10% of what you make per year. Buying real estate, right? You want to be able to own equity so you can pass it down to your kids and grandkids. And the only way that we're going to have generational wealth is if we invest in assets that grow over time. So whether that be the stock market, it be real estate, interest in private equity. If you own a business, right, maybe you want to pass that down to your children. Those are the ways that we are able to address the financial wealth. And in regards to your question on debt, not all debt is bad. Obviously, you want to avoid the credit card debt, the high interest bearing debt that can kill you over time, because the interest mm-hmm. rates on those are 20-30%. But good debt is like buying real estate, right?
Yep.
Because you are able to take a appreciation in the property and hopefully sell it at a premium or at a profit over time. So not all debt is bad debt, but you want to stay away from the credit card debt, the fast cash loan places that charge yeah. you really, really high interest debt, right? Yeah. Those types of places. Yeah.
So in this climate, everything is so pricey, inflation is on the rise. What is your suggestion on how much should people have in an emergency fund?
Yeah, it's a great question. So as a certified financial planner or CFP, it's like the gold standard of how one should, quote unquote, live their lives. So the CFP board says that everybody should have 3 to 6 months of pure cash or living expenses in savings at all times. So if you were to lose your job tomorrow, right, and you spend $5,000 a month, you should have $15,000 that is either in savings or it can be quickly liquidated through other investments as your safe haven. If you're a dual income household, mm-hmm. they would say you can actually err on the side of 3 months opposed to the 6 months, but they say 3 to 6 months is the general rule of thumb. Now, problem that we run into today is, as you mentioned, everything is so, so expensive. So I think I was reading an article in Wall Street Journal that said groceries are up like 150% yep. since 2020.
Yep.
So where we get into the problem is things are getting more expensive, but despite things getting more expensive, the biggest trap that people run into is saying, I'm going to start saving and I'm going to start living the right way when I start making X amount of money.
Yep.
And that's the wrong way to think about saving and investing and just having a relationship with money.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of people that I've met who, you know, when I got out of college and they were making 50, 60 grand a year, and they said, hey, when I start making six figures, I'm going to save 5 to 10% of my income. But mm-hmm. if they weren't already saving 5 to 10% of their income when they were making half the money, then they weren't going to do it when they, you know, started making six figures. Because what happens, you just level up, right? You get a nicer apartment that you live at. You buy a nicer car. You go out to eat more often. And that's why I said, you know, just a few minutes back, it's all about how your relationship with money starts. So the quicker that you can set a foundation and actually create those habits early on, whether you make $100,000 a year, $50,000, $1 million a year, it's creating a system, just like a muscle, right?
Yeah.
And things become muscle memory for you. So that's the best way to attack generational wealth, live within your means, start actually saving and investing over time, is to just build it into your lifestyle, no matter how much money you make.
Yeah. So I'm excited about this segment, right? We're talking about stocks and investing. So I follow these homies, Earn Your Leisure, and the homie Ian Dunlap, right? And he has this this motto that he goes by, two tech, two index, and invest in quality companies and hold for 10 plus years, right? That sounds so easy to say, right? Asking somebody somebody that may be living paycheck to paycheck, right? And and you said whether it's $50,000, $1 million or whatever, and realistically, how many people really do have $50,000 to get started, right? What are you, what is your advice, and what is investing really, and how can beginners get started that may not have that $50,000 or even $5,000? And then I'd like for you to touch on ETFs, mutual funds, and which is best for most people. And then I have a second questions, but I'll let you hit that first half first.
Okay. So the beauty of this internet age that we're in, you can go create an account in 5 minutes.
Yep.
And that account is as simple as going to Fidelity.com, CharlesSchwab.com, all these discount brokers that will allow you to have an investment account. It could be even Acorns, right?
Yep.
The app that you it rounds up to the nearest dollar,
yep.
and it puts that money into an investment account where you can buy stocks and bonds.
Yep.
I am on the side of buying ETFs because ETFs, you track an index, but also they're low cost.
Yep.
So if you already have somebody who doesn't have a ton of capital to invest, they want to be cognizant about like where the fees are going if they're paying any. So ETFs have little to no fees at all. So I'm more biased on ETFs rather than mutual funds. And
could you real quickly let people know what an ETF stands for?
Yeah, so ETF is an exchange traded fund. So it tracks a basket of stocks and or bonds.
Yep.
The most common that people hear about when they watch the news and they say the market's up today, typically going to be talking about the S&P 500, which tracks the 500 largest companies in the United States. Now, generally, most common companies that you hear are like the tech companies, the FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, right? But you can also buy an index that's the Dow. The Dow Jones is, 30 top companies. The biggest takeaway is that it allows you to diversify your risk, right?
Yep.
So instead of going out and saying, I'm going to put, $100 on Nike, I'm just going to go buy that index because you much rather have 500 stocks rather than one stock. Because now all your eggs are in one basket. So it definitely diversifies the risk. It smooths out the volatility over time. But this is something that, people can literally go online and make an account in 5 minutes. And once you have the investment account, then you can start to experiment and say, all right, I'm going to put $20 into this index or to this ETF or $50 or $100. So to your point, you don't need $50,000, $100,000, like start something small, $5. They even let people buy partial shares now. So there really is no excuse in regards to the amount of money that people have. They just have to take the initiative and do it.
Yep. Next question. What do you think about day trading? I know I have my thoughts about it. Could you let folks know what day trading is and your thoughts about it?
Yeah. So on the private wealth side, which is where I've been working my entire career, I am more focused on long term. So personally, I don't do day trading, nor do I advise on it. But I do know a statistic that says like 80% of day traders actually lose money. They don't make money.
Yeah.
Right. and it's not to say everybody who does it doesn't make money, but it's a difficult industry to be in. Essentially, you're either trading futures, currencies. You might just be trading stocks, right? You're looking to make the edge. If you see earnings are coming out with Google tomorrow, your bet is that, oh, they're going to beat earnings or they're going to lose earnings, and you're trying to hedge your bet on if they're going to do better or worse. It's a lot of work. It's not my expertise, or I tell people that all the time. If you want to day trade, that's on you. Like, what I do is I advise on long-term wealth. So if you told me I want to retire in 20 years, send my kids to college, live on $100,000, $200,000 a year, I'm going to be able to do the math and say, this is exactly what you need to do from now until then. So that's my two cents on day trading.
Got it. Got it. Yeah, day trading is extremely risky and volatile. I'm not comfortable with it. I don't have the mental patience for day trading. It's a huge IPO coming out, right? And a lot of people are moving funds and getting ready for this IPO, right? And they're saying many new millionaires will be made. I'm watching all of the TV shows and the road shows that they're doing about it, CNBC's and everything. I would love to get your thoughts on this IPO. Some people would say, don't invest in the IPO right now. Wait for the stock to settle and reset itself and then get in. But then you have a sector saying, hey, this IPO is different. But data shows that the last, I want to say, last 5 to 10 years, IPOs have significantly dropped 55% since their IPO. So I would love to get your thoughts on that. And if any of the listeners are thinking about investing in the SpaceX IPO or the Anthropic or the OpenAI IPOs that are coming out, and your thoughts on if they're being getting caught into a trap or are they ahead of the game?
Absolutely. So this is it's a great question. The first thing I want to do is take a step back, and I tell people, if you're going to invest in an IPO or let alone anything, you want to ensure that the money that you're investing, you're not going to need it in the next 3 to 6, 6 to 12 months, right? So you always want to go into an investment with a long-term time horizon of, do I need this money? And if I do need it in the next 6 to 12 months, can I weather the storm if it does lose 20 to 30 to 40%, right? You have to know that that just comes with investing. Then I would say, okay, we actually did a research report on this, and you hit it right on the head. Most IPOs lose like 50% of their value within the first several months because it's a lot of volatility. You have a bunch of people who were early employees who are selling their stock, right? So they're walking away with their gains. But then also the market has their viewpoints on, is the company over or undervalued? This is all these different mechanisms that are affecting that stock price day to day. Ultimately, what happens is after about 3 months, the dust settles. But you have to remember that if you're going to invest in an IPO, this is not a let me get rich overnight type of thing. You
Yeah,
know, the
absolutely.
stock may pop up, but the likelihood that it's going to stay stagnant is nearly 0%, right? It's probably going to be real high, real low. So you just have to understand the risks that are warranted when you step into that. I do think long term, it could definitely be a really strong company. Like Elon Musk is a smart guy. The guy, he has a bunch of success in the past with Tesla and all his other ventures. But if you look at the IPOs of like Google when they first IPO'd or Facebook, which is now Meta, right? Those companies have grown
I
substantially
think,
since their IPO,
what was that,
right?
Facebook IPO? They're like $40 or something.
Yeah, I think if you would have invested in like Google since inception, like the rate of return year over year is like 25, 30%. But what they don't tell you is like in 2007, 2008, you would have lost like half your investment when the markets were down, right? You always gonna have volatility, but you have to have that long-term time horizon and know that I'm gonna get in, it's gonna be up, it's gonna be down, but over time I'm gonna make money. But if you're just buying an IPO to make money within the next month or two, like I would say, you know, that's not the most sound way to do it.
I could attest to that from personal recent experience. In excitement, waiting for SpaceX and everything, I jumped into the Cerebras IPO extremely early and seeing it rise and rise. I'm like, ah, and knowing everything, having to, you need to have the mental discipline to be like, wait, sit on your hands. Don't get too excited by what you're seeing. wait because it's going to retest and show all of these things. So I ended up buying a bunch of shares of Cerebras at $355, right? A share.
Okay.
Today, yesterday, Cerebras was at like $218. So
Prime example.
So I took a loss on that. And because I was waiting for SpaceX, which I really had that money funded in the account for, I ended up selling those shares and essentially losing roughly $250 per share on that Cerebras IPO. Now I'm gonna re-get in at a lower value, but that is a real life example of exactly what you were speaking on. And you kind of highlighted it, but I would like for you to just reiterate what risk should every investor understand.
Yeah, they often say past performance is not an indication of future gains, and that couldn't be more apparent, right? So it's always going to be risks, right? When you're investing in the stock market, a dollar today is not going to be worth a dollar, you know, tomorrow what it is. But the only way to actually grow wealth in this country that we're in is to invest. You have to invest in either the stock market, real estate. Like, there has to be something that's growing at a pace that keeps up with the economy, right? So inflation typically is around 2-3% a year. Lately, it's been much higher because you have the oil debacle with the Strait of Hormuz and all that.
Yeah.
So all those things are passed down to the consumer. So when groceries get higher because oil is more expensive, that means you're trying to go visit your family across the country now. Like, all those price increases, that's inflation. And the only way to counter that is to invest in asset classes that will keep up and or outpace inflation. And historically speaking, it's only two asset classes that have done that consistently over the past 50 or 100 years, and it's the stock market and it's real estate. All right, gold is a good inflation hedge, but if you look at it across the board, you know, the stock market will give you 8-10% a year on average, whereas gold typically just keeps up with inflation, and then you might have spikes here and there. So the net is to invest, but you have to understand the risk that you're taking as well.
Man, well, this went so fast, bro. I wish we had some more time, but can you please real quickly tell the people where they could find you or any information you'd like to share before we go to break?
Yeah, man. So on LinkedIn, Jeffrey Lewis II. My Instagram handle is JLou Financially Fit. Always open to helping folks out. Those are my two sources to hit me up there.
Man, well, I will definitely be hitting you up, Jay Lewis, because I need some more financial discipline on not jumping in these IPOs early. But thank you once again for joining us on The Grapevine. I am your host, Ray Nitti, filling in for the homie Manon, live on The Truth 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You are now swinging from The Grapevine on The Truth 101.7 FM, located in the heart of downtown Milwaukee in the 3rd Street Market Hall, live from the American Family Insurance Studios. I am your boy, Ray Nitti, filling in for Manon Sabir. We just had the homie Jeff Lewis on, who brought us a lot of amazing information on financial literacy, the state of the current investment market, different ways to generate generational wealth. And one thing that he said is, though, the one of the only ways to really generate wealth is to invest. So we need to do more investing as a community. I wish we had enough time to get into the cryptocurrency conversation, but yeah, that was a real amazing interview. So I wanted to go back real quick and see if anybody wanted to call in. 833-212-1017. The number is 833-212-1017 to talk about the recent news. Marty Brooks fired today from Wisconsin Center District for misappropriating funds of $50,000 to $60,000, spending it on things like they said, like expensive shoes. I can't remember if they said trips, but also gave donations to a couple political officials as well. So do you all think that the leaders we have in place is just driving Milwaukee into further debt and just really just not doing a good job at pushing our city forward? 833-212-1017 is the number to call. But as we are back on our mindfulness stuff, I just wanted to go back on some stuff Manon was talking about before he had to step out. I don't think we meditate enough as a culture, as a community. I would love to see meditation implemented in our public school system, and maybe it already has and I'm just not aware of it, but there should be more meditation in our school systems from young, not just high school when they're thinking kids are unreachable or whatever the case may be. But I think we need to really take that time to invest in our minds and just chilling out for a second. It's okay to just be still and breathe. And as I stated earlier, when I was introduced to meditation, it was one of the darkest spots in my life. I was questioning so many things around me, people, friends, associates, business relationships, and just feeling mentally overwhelmed with the world. And I just want to know, has anybody just felt mentally overwhelmed to the point where you didn't know what to do? And how did you end up pulling yourself out of that? Once again, the number is 833-212-1017. And is it Mindful Movement Mondays is what he calls it, I think. Mindful Movement Mondays. And ironically, it is Men's Mental Health Month. I did not know that. So what a fitting topic. I do think as men, we need to take care of our mental health a lot more. We need to take that time to put thought between thought and reaction. And we'll get more into that soon as we come back from this break. Don't go anywhere. I am your host, filling in for Manon Sabir on the Grapevine on the Truth 101.7 FM. Welcome back. It is your boy Ray Nitty filling in for Manon Sabir on the Grapevine on the Truth 101.7 FM, located in the heart of downtown Milwaukee, the American Family Insurance Studio. This be kind of fire, man. Who is this, Zach?
It's just from Universal.
Shouts out to Universal for the free beats, man. Men's Mental Health Month. I just want to read some stats here. Men's mental health faces a critical crisis driven by high rates of untreated depression, externalized stress behaviors, and disproportionately high suicide mortality. Societal stigmas and outdated masculine norms cause approximately, hear this out now, 40% of men to never speak about their mental health. That's a lot. 40% of men never speak about their mental health. High risk, right? They say men are nearly four times more likely to die by suicide than women, accounting for approximately 75% to 80% of all suicide-related deaths. I'm going to read that again. Men are nearly four times more likely to die by suicide than women, accounting for approximately 75% to 80% of all suicide-related deaths.
Damn!
So, correlation, right? 40% of us are not even talking. We never speak about our mental health, the state of our mind, and so forth, which I feel has been causing a rise in what I would say is men not being able to properly deal with their emotions, that lead to them physically harming women, lead to them making terrible choices with their kids, abusing kids and so forth. It's, they're taking it out on somebody else because we have so much going on in our minds that we're not even talking about it. Why aren't men talking about their mental health? Is it because we don't want to feel soft? We don't want to be vulnerable. We don't want to come off as if we, you know, don't got it together. It's okay to not be okay. And I think as men, specifically black men, we should have more groups or get in our group chats. Let's talk about it more. We should have more spaces. And I'm not saying that none doesn't exist, because I know there's a few organizations that does a lot surrounding men's health, right? Men's mental health. But I think as men, we need to be more proactive with making it normal within our communities to talk to one another and just be like, yo, bro, are you okay? Are you cool? I see you've been operating under a little stress and you've been saying some wild stuff in the chat, bro. So, like, what can I do to be an ear? And sometimes people just want a ear that they could lean on and say the things that they need to say without judgment, without fear of being ridiculed or cast aside or being looked at as if is it okay to say the word crazy in this society? People don't want to come off as like, oh, they think I'm crazy or so something. So we need more of these groups that we could have these conversations with and be vulnerable as men and talk about the things. I'm gonna read this one more time for you all. Men are nearly four times more likely to die by suicide than women, accounting for approximately 75 to 80% of all suicide-related deaths. Please call in 833-212-1017. We'd love to hear from you. 833-212-1017. How are you dealing with your mental health? How are you going about your days, and are you not talking about it? Why are you not talking about it? Or is it just because you aren't comfortable, or you just don't feel like you have a safe place to express yourself? Leading killer. Suicide is the leading cause of death for men under the age of 50. That's another stat. Suicide is the leading cause of death for men under the age of 50. Undiagnosed. Alarming data shows that 60% of men who die by suicide had no previously documented mental health conditions. So all the data is there that points towards that we need to have more conversations. We need to be more proactive about these conversations with mental health. And how are we going to look out for our friends, check in on our friends? As a black man, I know I could do a better job at calling the homies and be like, hey, bro, how you doing? And not just leaving women out of this, too, because I think black women have an extreme amount of mental stress that they are put under in today's society. So where is the support groups? How can we be better as community in being there for each other when it comes down to our mental health? And we could start bringing down these numbers. And they got stats too about some of the prevalent conditions, but we're going to go to a break real quick before we get into some of these prevalent conditions. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to The Grapevine on The Truth 101.7 FM. Yes, yes. Welcome back to The Grapevine, 101.7 FM. That's right. I'm glad you didn't go anywhere. Live from the American Family Insurance Studio in the heart of downtown Milwaukee, located in the 3rd Street Market Hall. Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. We getting into the prevalence of conditions. So we talked about the statistics. And now we're about to get into some prevalence of the conditions. Depression and anxiety. While women report higher rates of diagnosed depression, millions of men struggle with mental health issues. Over 6 million American men experience depression annually, though it often goes misdiagnosed. Substance abuse. Men are significantly more likely to use alcohol and drugs as a coping mechanism, with rates of alcohol dependence and binge drinking far exceeding those of women. Let's pause on this real quick. So we have men not talking about mental health. We have men not going to get it diagnosed. We have suicide rates 4 times higher in men. And now we are looking at the prevalence conditions, depression and anxiety, substance abuse. So now we have all of these thoughts in our heads, mental issues that they men may be dealing with. And now we add substances into the mix. What do we think happens when you add those substances to the mix and you're also dealing with all of these different mental demons that you're trying to keep under wraps? Well, we know what happens when we have a drink or two. We turn into a different person. You know, some people. Some people. So imagine somebody who's dealing with all of that, and then now they're intoxicated, high, whatever the case may be. I see Manon is back. Come join me, Manon. Now we have somebody who's drunk, intoxicated, and dealing with mental instabilities, and now no longer in control of their actions because the substances are in play now. Now that leads to potential domestic violence issues, abuse issues, negligence, leaving loaded weapons around where kids could get to them and harm themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How do we put a balance on this, Manon? I don't know if you was able to catch some of what we were talking about. Just to bring you up to speed, we're just going through some of the statistics. Approximately 40% of men never speak about their mental health.
Right.
75 to 80% of all suicide-related deaths are men. Mm-hmm. Men are nearly 4 times more likely to die by suicide than women.
Right.
Suicide is the leading cause of death for men under the age of 50.
Mm-hmm.
And data shows that 60% of men who die by suicide had no previously documented mental health condition.
Man. And these are all modern statistics. Mm-hmm. These are today's up-to-date statistics.
Yep. And then here's another one. I'll leave you with this. Mm-hmm. Up to 90% of individuals diagnosed with schizophrenia before the age of 30 are men.
I think we're looking at a society with that is born into stress. If you look at living in the Caribbean, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you see the kids living in the Caribbean, they are foreign to the idea of someone in their family having major, in wide variety, major mm-hmm. amounts of mental health conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You can almost ask any of your relatives in St. Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
I can ask some of my friends in Jamaica, and especially some of the rural areas, like, hey, look, are you familiar with schizophrenia? Are you mm-hmm. familiar with bipolar diseases?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they are not. And I think, you know, if we're looking at it from a 30,000 foot view,
mm-hmm.
we have individuals that are suffering from these conditions based upon the trauma that has been ingested from,
absolutely.
You know, 400 years ago,
absolutely.
300 years ago, 200 years ago. My grandfather, my great-grandfather fought his way through Reconstruction.
Mm.
So he was a prize fighter, and then he wound up teaching my grandfather how to fight. But yeah. in that prize fighting, yeah, we were handed fighting naturally. Yeah. But it also came with trauma. It was a line of trauma that came through our DNA. And it's something that's being it shakes out,
mm-hmm.
you know, throughout time.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not hit right away. It may not have hit his son, who was my grandfather. It may hit somebody else, you know, 100 years from now.
Yeah. Man, how you welcome back, man. This is your show. Thank Take you. It away. No, Take, no, it back, I,
no, Take it back. Look, man. You filling in, no.
Man, filling in. And you back.
You like peanut butter. This like peanut butter and jelly.
Man, come on now. Chunky or smooth?
If it's smooth. Smooth. We don't want chunky no more.
Yeah, man. So
yeah.
But no, I just thought that you know, based on the conversation that we were having earlier, mm-hmm. It just prompted me to look up some of these stats. And these recent stats are, and these were from Anxiety and Depression Association. Where these stats came from.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it was very important, man, that we continue to have these conversations. And I also think it's important to move past the conversations and what does action look like.
Right.
You know, because I think as a society, we do an amazing job of having conversations
mm-hmm.
around things. But where is the activation
right.
around these things? And I think within myself, I'm going to work on seeing how I could do more to be on the activation side and not just the conversation side. But take it home, Anand.
Hey, let's make sure that we always tune in to 101.7, The Truth Radio. This is The Grapevine. We got Jazz, Tyler, and Meech coming up with a tap-in. Hey, we're going to pay these bills. But before we pay these bills, make sure you pull somebody up. Don't pull away. Yep. Let's go.
Don't go anywhere.
Yeah.